listening to the C Word Radio, the podcast where we ask, what the f*** does young cancer survivorship mean? With me, Helen King, and guests. Subscribe and rate on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Hello and welcome back. If this is your first time here, thank you for clicking play. There are around about 70 other episodes if you would like to dive into more cancer-y content. Today's episode is the last for this season. I'm going to have a bit of a break and come back around August. If there's anything that you think I should be covering or anyone that you would love me to interview, I am completely open to suggestions. One of the reasons I'm taking a break is I feel like I need to pull back a little bit from cancer content. I've taken Facebook and Instagram off my phone, which if you know me, you know that is a pretty big step, because I'm just trying to limit my social media intake at the moment. I think one of the things about being in the cancer community, especially the younger cancer community, is that people don't always make it. And I've been noticing recently that there are people that I have been following who are either having recurrence or they're passing away. And I know this is a harsh reality of cancer, and I am quite an empathic person. And so some days that just feels like a lot to take in. And life is really getting busier. And this is one of the things about ongoing survivorship, is that your life does change. I started my own podcasting business last year, and it's been pretty good. I mean, anyone who has tried to go into business for themselves knows the highs and lows that it can bring. And recently I took on a part-time job. So life is pretty full. And I'm trying to get back into some of my hobbies and cautiously re-engaging with the world now that the plan seems to be living with COVID. And I think I just need some time to reflect. I've been doing a lot of inner work this past year, and I've shared on the podcast before that having breast cancer really ripped the band-aid off a lot of my stuff. You know, all of that stuff, that baggage that some of us have. And in my experience, you can either keep ignoring your trauma or face it head on and try and heal, which is what I've been doing. A lot of my trauma actually comes from not being diagnosed with ADHD until 2020, when I was almost 40. And it's really hard to explain in a few short sentences how this impacts you. Growing up not knowing why you don't fit in or why life just seems a little bit harder than people around you, and why other people just seem to understand how to do really normal things and those things are overwhelming to you. And my cancer experience really altered me. You know, I want to be able to say at some point that, oh gosh, I'm getting emotional. I want to be able to say that I don't have PTSD symptoms anymore, or that they're manageable, or that I don't think about my cancer every day, and that I'm not carrying around the grief and the sadness, or that it's not impacting my life in the way that it has. And I want to be able to share this experience with you. So my hope is that by creating this podcast and sharing more of it, is that it might help someone else, because there's really not a template or guidance around healing your whole self after cancer. The interview you'll hear today will give you some insight into what it's like going through a cancer diagnosis with untreated ADHD. I'm joined by my beautiful friend Alyssa, who, like me, was diagnosed with ADHD in 2020. Alyssa is a cancer survivor who lives in LA with her dog Bunny, and she was diagnosed with thyroid cancer about 15 years ago. Our conversation focuses more on after the diagnosis and treatment and making sense of your life when you're diagnosed with ADHD as an adult. If you want to keep in touch with me as I take a bit of a break, sign up for my newsletter. There is a link in the show notes, and I also have a sign up form links on my social media. And I'm going to try and blog more about what's going on and my experiences and getting back to work and life after a cancer diagnosis. And I do update my subscribers when my blog comes out. This is Alyssa's story. How did life change for you after your cancer experience?
I think it was I need to just get through this and then move on. And not that you can ever actually move on. That is not a thing that happens, because you're just, once you get that branded C on you, it's like you have to be constantly tracked for the rest of your life and all of these sorts of things. But I know, at least in my experience, one of the most insensitive things that was said to me while I was in the hospital after surgery was that if you had to pick a cancer, this is the cancer you should pick.
Oh my God.
And I know that what they meant is it's very treatable. I did not get as physically sick as a lot of people do with cancer. And I knew that personally, having gone through other family members' cancer experiences. I also didn't really think I was lucky to be like, I'm really glad I got thyroid cancer. Like, it's still cancer. It's still not real fun. Not something I would choose. And so I think also just from my own sort of personality or trauma responses of really minimizing my own needs, that even now, and now it's been 15 years, but sometimes it'll come up in a conversation with somebody that I haven't met that I'm like, oh yeah. And when I had cancer and they're like, wait, you had cancer? I don't really advertise it all the time. It's always a part of me, but it does change your life because there's no other thing that can happen. For me also, especially right after, I was already a vegetarian, but I got really into like raw foods and I was really went through this whole like super holistic sort of thing and trying to really just help my body heal also, because especially with your thyroid runs your entire body. And I did not feel like myself for at least a year afterwards. Just your hormones have to re-regulate, and I'm on a synthetic thyroid medicine that I'll be on forever. It's very common in women also, but I guess I probably don't even stop to think of the ways that it, how it changed life, but
15 years ago, that's quite a long time and lots of things happened. Yeah, it's funny because I wanted to look after myself and stuff, but I felt like my eating got worse after cancer because I think I already had, and this is a conversation for another podcast, I think, but I'd already had like a long, complicated history with yo-yo dieting. I've been a bigger woman since I was in my early 20s, and so I'm going up and down and that sort of thing. What happened for me, I was so fatigued and I found it really hard to look after myself. And then now I know I have ADHD, and I was also in menopause at the time, I was just overwhelming and difficult. But I got really paranoid about what the hell do you eat, because you hear in all sorts of different things that this causes cancer and you shouldn't eat this and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to get through the day, let alone worrying about what I'm going to eat and all of that sort of stuff. So I feel like one of the things that cancer did for me was that it actually really shone a light on parts of myself that needed attention. And I think what I mean by that, especially around food and looking after myself and stuff, was really making me rethink what healthy means and what being well means and how do you look after yourself. It really shone a light around some of the really fucked up things, like my fucked up relationship with food and exercise and those sorts of things. So I don't know if other people can relate to that, but that's definitely been part of that process over the past 4 years, is really evaluating like how I look after myself, my relationship with my body.
How about now? What is your awareness of it on a daily basis right now?
Of having cancer.
And just that specifically, with how are you taking care of your body? It's like your body betrayed you.
And
it's your vessel.
And it's really, it's interesting you ask that, because I feel like I am, and I hate the word journey. I'm on a journey. I'm on a path. Because I've reached almost like what I'd say, like a critical sort of hysteria, where, because I am bigger and I put on weight after treatment, all of those things. And so I am a big person, and I don't know what it's like in the States, but fatness is really vilified here. It's the big boogeyman. And so being a fat cancer survivor, especially breast cancer, is
challenging. And I had a panic attack one night about it after seeing article on the news about some research. And that kind of shook me a bit and going, I can't spend the rest of my time on this earth hating my body and is thinking that it's going to, yeah, that it's against me and that there's mm-hmm. something wrong. Yeah. So I think at the moment, yeah, it's still challenging sometimes about worrying what to eat. And I think having that kind of executive functioning issues and having to be really kind to myself and thinking, do you know what? Sometimes you have to order out and that's okay. And sometimes buying heat and eat meals is okay, because when you are a woman or a person who, especially if you have periods and have ADHD, it's actually a lot harder to do some of those things that other people take for granted. I think that's what I'm trying to get out in my long, convoluted way, is that I think where I'm at right at this moment is working on being a lot kinder to myself, thanking my body for getting me through cancer, mm-hmm. realizing that the ideal of things, and that's okay. And actually just trying to, appreciate my body for what it's done, and that trying to relearn being in this body and trying not to be scared of it or treat it badly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about you? What's it like 15 years later?
So it's interesting you say that, because something that what came to mind is you, thank you for sharing, by the way, because I think that's part of the healing journey is sharing these experiences. And I think especially when you combine it with specifically to ADHD, which there's so much internalized shame with ADHD, and then coupled with what is an ideal, because the ideal is bullshit anyway. It's based on nothing. It's not real. And that your body size does not equate health and your level of healthiness. And so in sort of relearning a lot of those things where it's like, what is my own internalized either fat phobia or these, or this thing where also it's like, what about comfort when you're trying to heal from something like that? It's hard to, I know people can go to the extremes. And I think that knowing about ADHD for myself now, and when I think back to that time where it was like, I worked with somebody who knew about raw foods and that her husband got really healthy from it. And it was like, it was a hyperfixation.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know why it was like, because it's all or nothing. And that's an ADHD thing. But at the time, it was just makes sense. I'm really into this right now. And I think where now part of it is like general aging. And I'm in my mid 40s and just giving fewer fucks. I don't know if I can say that. But I just don't. It's like all of these things that programmed into us around a lot of that kind of stuff. It's not like it's gone away for me and I'm like, I don't have any body shame or anything, but I think that self-compassion has really entered my own personal conversation with myself a lot more than it did at the time when I was sick, because I just had blinders on of, I just got to get through this thing and check all the boxes and then whatever. I wasn't really concerned with how am I actually feeling, or like when it comes to food. Also, we've been so deprogrammed to listening to our intuitive cues, and then just society's whole thing. It's like when you are battling executive dysfunction and you're just trying to feed yourself, that is not the time to be in an argument with myself about I should probably have a vegetable and not pasta, but pasta is really good. And sometimes that soothing aspect is the higher nutritional value to me.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because if I think back to being in treatment and then the year after, not knowing I had ADHD, I was in a chemical menopause. And so for people who aren't familiar with ADHD and things, one of the things that's really important to know is for people who have periods or were, you know, born a woman, the way that dopamine interacts with estrogen is very important for good brain function. And so for someone with ADHD who already struggles to produce dopamine, when you have a severe drop in estrogen, like you do in menopause or before your period starts, it makes all of your ADHD symptoms worse. And so if I look back, it's quite hard actually when I look back to chemo and things. It's like, well, that was hard anyway. So
how do I know? As a baseline.
Yeah. So I try and look back at that and have a bit of compassion and go, fuck, that was really hard. It was a really hard time. And in some ways it was a bit of a gift, because that's what led to my diagnosis, was during lockdown, for so many people this happened. And I just had this sense that I know that life after cancer can be really challenging, because you've just been through this hugely traumatizing and life-altering thing. When your intuition tells you there's something not right here, and then it really was some sort of weird divine intervention that I met someone. Actually, a very good friend of mine was diagnosed, and then I met someone and we started talking, and I started going, why do I relate to you so much?
Yeah, sounds strange to say, like, one of the upsides of COVID was a lot of specifically women, or like you said, like people who were born women who were or raised as girls, the signs were missed because people still do not understand how ADHD presents in women. And so some magical thing happened during COVID where a lot of people started to share this information. And there's been like a real... I've seen something about how they were like, oh, it's just like a fad that everybody's like, well, I have ADHD now. And it's like, no, we didn't know. Like, none of us knew. So something happened globally. I know that was for me, because it was like the lockdown, all of the things that I could scrape by and just function enough to get by. It was like a magnifying glass on all of those things, where it was just like spiral town. And it was...
Absolutely. And so what were some of those things? Because I think this is the interesting thing, is that my assumption was like what other people's are, I think, is that ADHD is something in small boys where they can't sit still and they can't pay attention. And that was it. So I think it would be really good to explain what our experience was, to show that actually ADHD is a lot more than not being able to sit still. What was going on that made you go, ooh, hello?
So as I mentioned earlier, I am used to living a very chaotic life. Like, I am just attracted to high intensity, high burnout. Like, that burnout is my baseline of just, if I'm not totally flat out, something must be wrong. And I also don't know what to do with myself. If I'm not crazy busy, quote unquote, crazy busy, what am I doing? And that's what happened to me in lockdown. I work in the entertainment business, which is constantly going 100 miles an hour and functioning, having all of that come to a halt and having all of this time and being, it was very scary to be in. We've never experienced a global pandemic. What would happen? I would sit at my desk and I had a giant to-do list. I also happened to be starting on becoming an entrepreneur. It all aligned at the same time, which now that I look back, that was probably enough of this for me. And I would be busy all day and get nothing done. Yeah. And so that was the start of what is happening. And then I was depressed, which it was like, so we're most of us, we were like in the pandemic. And that was actually, I went to my doctor. I had anxiety. I knew I had anxiety prior to the 2020 experience, but I hadn't really struggled a whole lot with depression. And obviously over time I did, but it was just, I felt like, I think I'm depressed. I went to seek treatment for depression. And so in meeting with that doctor and going over things, and he said, have you ever been tested for ADHD? And I was like, no, I don't have ADHD. That's not me. Like you, I'm not a hyper little boy. That is not a problem of mine. And he was like, I just would like to do this one little whatever, just a little,
were they test cheese?
Yeah. And screening or whatever. And that's how I found out I had ADHD. I had zero idea at all. And I went to get help for depression, and I walked away with being depressed and having ADHD. I got the, and anxiety. I got the 3 for 1. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, it's so interesting because I feel the same. I was explaining this to someone recently, actually just this week, and because I've been misdiagnosed a couple of times with mental illnesses that I do not have and never did have. And so that was really detrimental to my, I think, my life's trajectory, is being told that you are this person, these are the things about you, and that actually none of those stories are true.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that diagnosis and being told, no, you never had those things, and this is what's been going on, and this is who you are, going, holy shit.
And then oh my what God. Do you do with that information? Because I don't know in New Zealand, but in the US, it basically was like, you have ADHD, here's some medicine, check back
good
in.
Good luck and Godspeed.
Yeah. And so I was in shock for a while about it, and I didn't really do anything about it for a couple months because I was like, I don't know what to do about this. There's literally, it's on you to figure it out. And so it's also like you're untangling this whole web of your life experiences and things that make so much more sense now that you know this, but what do you do about it?
Yes. Yeah, and it's such a good question because it was very similar for me. And I did see an ADHD coach and she was really helpful. She helped me understand more about the executive dysfunction, how to go easier on myself and learn more about the interaction between hormones and things, which is very important for women or people that have periods or who are going into perimenopause or menopause. And so that was really helpful. And I think that a lot of people I've spoken to also go through a grieving period where a lot of us have had this life where you've been told you're not living up to your expectations, or you often make silly mistakes that you don't mean to, but and you can't understand why you don't get it. Or my life path, now I know about my ADHD, is textbook ADHD in a woman or young girl. It's could have reached so much more, but didn't. And there's part of me that feels quite sad and angry about that, especially for being misdiagnosed with things that I never had and being stigmatized for those things.
I think that's where some of that self-kindness and compassion is so important too, because I have a similar experience of just what could have been different had I known this information.
Yes.
Yeah. And something I'll share with you, I saw TikTok has been a wealth of information for me about ADHD.
Yeah. Yeah.
In information and understanding and feeling seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw one recently from a woman, and she was like, I'm not trying to minimize what people are saying of grieving their life, but she was saying, I think maybe it was in the 90s or something. They didn't have the things that we even have now in terms of accommodations.
That's true.
It was different. Like now, when you think about the stigma of a lot of mental illness where it wasn't really talked about, and maybe ADHD because it was like a little boy thing, but it was like they gave them Ritalin and I don't know, let them run around in circles on the playground. I don't really know how they treated the boys when I was like a child either. But now that there's more research now, they didn't know and they still don't know, but they're finding a lot of things out that didn't exist when we were kids. So it was actually helpful for me because there is a lot of sadness about I struggled so much. I struggled with so many things silently because it was like, something's wrong with me. I can see how other people don't have to work this hard. So I better keep that to myself and not ask for help also, because God forbid. Anyway, that kind of helped me reframe also that obviously you cannot change your past. You can only have the supports in place now, but also even if we had this information when we were kids, it might not have changed a whole lot.
I think that is a really good point. Because as you were talking, I was thinking about even the past 10, 15 years, what we know about autism is changing. But you're so right that so little we do know about ADHD, and especially in women. And it's funny you mentioned TikTok because people are getting quite hysterical about that because they're worried that people are self-diagnosing and blah, 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 blah. And I think, okay, that could be an issue and maybe they don't have it. But what you're actually missing is that a generation of people who have gone through life, not knowing or understanding that our brains are a little bit different. And it is like you're not giving us information. So it's like the community has got together and going, all right, this is my experience. Do you experience this? Right. Yeah.
And I think that's something, a lot of the symptoms of ADHD, it's not singular to ADHD. There are things that everybody struggles with. It's just what is the degree, because I didn't even really know the term executive dysfunction until I became aware of ADHD. It's giving a name to a lot of things that I didn't know had a name for what was happening for me. I just thought I was neurotic and had anxiety and just everything was harder for me and I just dealt with it. But it also, when I look back reading those journals, basically just been burned out my entire adult life.
Me too. Holy crap. Yes. That's been my cycle as well. And when you were talking earlier about what you were attracted to, I've always been attracted to, high energy, high pace environment.
High dopamine.
High dopamine. Yeah. And then at the same time, having like crushing imposter syndrome.
Totally.
So always burning out because I never thought I was good enough.
Yeah. Same for me.
And it's interesting, I think, having this experience so close to when I had cancer, because this has all been in 4 years. This is getting a bit philosophical and deep and meaningful, but I think for a lot of people who have had cancer that I've spoken to, especially when we're younger, it really impacts us and it can really impact your identity. And that's how it felt for me, was that I don't really recognize the person I was before, like even in photos and things. And so much of me has changed. And some of it is aging. I'm a 41-year-old woman. And so, of course, I'm not going to look the same as I did 20 years ago. But I guess I've also been through this hugely life-altering experience. And we've been through a pandemic. And then finding out I have ADHD. And a lot of what I think about at the moment is, who am I? Because I've had to be someone else my whole life because I was told, oh, you're too much. You're too intense. You're too full on. You're too serious. Or, oh, you're a bit out there. You're a bit weird. Oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. It made me think about how things like cancer can really alter your sense of self and trying to figure out who you are in the world and how you are in your body and what do you want to do with your life now. And if you throw in there an undiagnosed neurodivergence, then it's a whole kind of existential crisis in a way of going, oh my God, who the hell am I in the world?
Talking about TikTok again, there is I don't know, I guess a trend, but that I've seen a few times, specifically for women, where they are just like, I am reconnecting to the little girl that I was that I didn't get to be. And that is not necessarily specific to ADHD, because a lot of us were all, regardless, it's here are the patriarchal standards and here you go. We're giving it to you. And so please feel judged and shamed for the rest of your life. And what does it look like to reconnect to things that you knew that you couldn't express as a child or that were dampened by somebody saying something? So it could be so minuscule. It could be a throwaway comment that actually impacts us for the rest of our life that you're never like, did I stop doing that? I know for me, because I felt the same way where it's like, who am I? Just like, anyway, and what are the things that connect you to the real you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you're saying that, because I used to really enjoy drawing and just mucking around with things when I was little, and I stopped because I can't paint like they want you to in like high school art and things like that.
You're not going to be a successful artist or something.
No.
You can still enjoy it.
But you can still enjoy it. And that's a really hard lesson for me, because there's part of my head that doesn't see the point in doing thing unless there's an outcome.
Yeah.
But what I've been doing is I've started drawing people again, and I go onto Pinterest and I look for like things to draw. And because I used to do this when I was a kid, where I'd draw people, I'd give them names and they'd have a whole backstory.
That's insane. And so you're doing it again.
I'm doing that again. I'm just drawing
people. How does it feel?
It's really fun. I really like it. Because I'm just having a moment where I'm like, I'm going to draw this person. What do they look like? What name do they suit? And just, yeah, I think I am trying to reconnect with that little girl who was told, no, you can't be like that.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had this experience, but that was something specific to ADHD where we are unknowingly following the dopamine. Like, I'm a creative person and I have a lot of mediums that I enjoy doing, and I will learn all about a thing, and I'll buy all these supplies and I'll do all these things, and then I never touch them again. And I always felt shame that I was like, why can't I just get back into weaving or whatever? Like, and so that is a part of the practice too, where it was like, when you were a kid, and you just got to have fun and play and draw and do whatever, where it doesn't matter. Like, I'm not trying to make it my profession, but you could actually just enjoy things.
Yeah.
Our capitalist world's like, oh, you're really good at that. You should monetize that. Or that could be your side job or whatever. For joy.
Enjoying it. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I think that's brilliant, and keep doing it. Having
weird people.
Weird people. I think also, is allowing a processing for you to happen. It's like our brains are computers. And with ADHD, it's like the fan is always on. Like, it's always running. Yeah. There's always a ticker tape running. And it's just like all this stuff is constantly happening. And I think especially I've got much more into like mindfulness practices and things like that. And that is what I hear when you share that. It's like, that's a mindfulness practice, because the other ADHD thing that I totally identify with is if I'm not 100% proficient at it, the first time I try it, then I'm throwing it away. I wasn't a brilliant artist the first time I tried this craft. Yeah. And so I guess I'm not meant to be.
So that's it.
Which is not true. And I know that, but it's hard to separate yourself from that all or nothing sort of thing where you're like, I'm so into this. I'm going to be amazing at it. It's going to be so fun. And then it looks like shit. And you're like, forget it.
I've been doing that with crocheting, because I can knit basically. And someone said, oh, maybe try crocheting. It can be really good for, just to something that is relaxing. And I fucking hate it. Crocheting has to be one of the most infuriating things. I can knit okay, so I've decided I'm going to stick to my knitting. But I so relate to so much of what you've been saying, because it is that idea of, oh, I'm going to draw again, but then there's part of me that wants to throw myself into it, buy all these supplies and think, oh, is that my identity? And I wonder whether that comes from that whole life of feeling like I've had to suppress myself. And so constantly trying out different things and going, is this who I'm meant to be? Is this where I fit?
What would it look like if it was all of those things that made up the whole?
Yeah.
That it doesn't have to be just one or two, or it's like the magician hat. You're like, oh yeah, and I draw and I knit and I think the neurospicy kind of thing. It's, we're all very interesting people. It's like a lot of very creative people have ADHD or have some level of neurodivergency. And I think that's sort of where I internalized some of those things as shame, because I was just like, why can't I just pick one thing? I have to pick a major. Like, I have to pick, why I can't pick a thing. I love lots of things. And if our society wants you to be like, here's a lane, you need to pick it. That does not work for my brain.
Me neither. No,
but it doesn't have to. We just never knew that was possible.
No, I want to jump back a little bit, because I feel like, and one of the reasons why I wanted to do this little series of people who have neurodivergent brain and have been through cancer is that I feel like there's probably people out there who are going through cancer at the moment or have been. And I do feel like it adds a layer of complexity or challenge that when I look back at my experience, I go, wow, yeah, that was... And so I'd love for you to share, looking back, how things that were challenging and what you would recommend now to someone who might be navigating a diagnosis of cancer and they have ADHD or maybe they're autistic, and some of the things that you think might help when you're having to deal with that sort of huge medical event.
Yeah. Yeah. Because one of the things that made me think of is, and this is just very common for people in medicine, where you got to bring it to a level that I can understand. And so a lot of times, like, especially when something like this happens, they start rattling off all of these things. And you're like, hang on, I'm like, I have like auditory processing things too. So I'm like, I'm three sentences back. And what now? And in thinking in the context of executive function, I know for me, there were all of these very specific instructions that I had to follow of what day I had to stop. I had to change my medication levels. What day you go off of it? I had to be on a special diet before I could do the radiation. And it was like, everything was like by, like, it was a lot of information to keep track of. And it makes me laugh because I was thinking about what specifically, this is for the radioactive iodine. I missed one of the things in the instructions. And when I went to receive the treatment, which you're literally like in a radioactive lab listening to the like, beep, 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 like you're taking this pill. And I misunderstood that I needed to have a new toothbrush for every single time I brushed my teeth. And I don't know why I missed that note. At that time, which is people were not wearing masks at the drugstore. I received this treatment. Like I had to leave the hospital, like with the mask on. And I went to the drugstore to buy all of the toothbrushes because I wasn't going to be able to do it when I was like quarantined. And it was like, now I can look back and be like, that was like a thing from ADHD. And so I guess that's my advice is something like, if you are unclear about something, it's okay to ask. If you feel like, I know I'm always like, I don't want to annoy people. You don't need to worry about it. Being really clear. And that's also before, like now everything is an internet portal of your instructions. So maybe some things are a little bit more helpful. But I think also, like you're not feeling well. And so when you're adding a lot of those elements, physically, existentially, all of these layers on top of it, and then you're functioning, where is support available to you?
I think that is a great point, though. I do think that it's really important for people if you... And the thing is it's not just... Executive dysfunction can show up in other ways if someone's depressed or traumatized and all that sort of stuff. But I think that's a really good point of people with ADHD especially. You can't give them more than maybe three instructions at a time or we will not remember what you tell us. And as you're talking, I think back to... My experience as well was very similar where I had my mastectomy. A few weeks later, I saw my oncologist. I found out that, yes, he was okay with me having fertility treatment. I had a two-week gap of having fertility treatment. And then I think there was maybe a week later, I was having chemo. And I remember sitting in my chemo orientation and I was so overwhelmed and so stressed out. And she was like telling me all of these things. And in my head just going, I can't cope with this information. Like I'm full of hormone to start with. Like my ovaries, like monsters. And you're sitting here telling me all of this stuff. And I'm just going, I think I did get really snotty. And I had quite a few like meltdowns during chemo.
Yeah.
And now I look back and I get that this is a huge emotional time and it's very normal.
Sure.
I guess looking through that lens of going, that was a lot to be dealing with when your poor little brain can't cope at the best of times.
And it's like, how do you know? Even as I think about, I don't know. I know for me, like I just really, as part of my personality, really tend to minimize a lot of my needs. Yes. Like, it's no big deal. I'm just, it's going to be fine. I don't want to ever burden anybody or whatever. Like, it's really not that bad. And it's like, you have cancer. It can be that bad. You have a permission slip for it to feel that bad and to have a meltdown, to have that whiny, a wine fest. When I didn't really know about this at the time, this has been a more recent understanding for me of like, our nervous system and whether you're in a state of regulation or dysregulation. And so think about like when you're sitting there with your hormones afire, you've got all of these things going on. You have to sit in this orientation. You're learning about like the poison they're about to inject into your body. Talk about dysregulating on like every level.
Yeah.
And so I think also because obviously like they're trying to help you, But yeah, a lot of those sort of things, when people are just like, do you have any questions? And it's, I need to like let this sink in, but also what could help regulate your nervous system learning all of this information? And yeah, or like when you're sitting there receiving treatment, I have a lot of memories of just looking up at tiles on the ceiling and just like crying. Just what are all these things that are happening to you that,
yeah,
it's scary because it's also like you could die.
Yeah.
And so people just kind of be like, the survival rate, like here are your chances. Like it's all of this like numbers, right, kind of stuff. And you're just like, okay, BRB,
yeah,
let me just, I don't know. That gets really internalized as well. And so when, mm-hmm, you think about what is healing from, mm-hmm, like a medical perspective and like the cancer, they need to get the cancer out of your body. They need to kill the cancer by whatever means possible. But then also what that is happening to you biologically also kills a lot of other important things that help your body, yep, function. It's, yep, sends your hormones into outer space. And everything is dysregulated on a cellular level, on like an emotional, mm-hmm, level, on your nervous system level. And so maybe that's part of my advice also is gaining some tools on self-soothing and how to get your nervous system back into regulation. Because there's, yeah, a reason you're feeling that way and you are normal. Whatever you are feeling is normal. Yeah. And is the right thing. Because I think the other thing is a lot of other people interject their experiences and, oh, yes, this happened to me and I was fine. That's great.
Yeah.
Or like my so-and-so had this and then, and they're okay now. I understand, mm-hmm, why people are trying to be comforting and share those experiences. But if it makes you feel like you're not doing it right, then it's a disservice to you. I understand, yeah, also. It's not easy to just be like, I just won't listen to anybody else. Some people have an easier time doing that than others. I understand. But what you are feeling, like honor that because it's real.
It's so true. It's such wonderful advice. And I understand why it's not really there. Is the oncologist and the surgeons or your specialists focused on, you know, your physical health? I've often said that the healing doesn't happen in the hospital. It happens.
That's a good way of putting
afterwards.
It.
Yeah. So it's a crazy time. And I usually start with this question, but because you understand my brain goes all over the place, we've just gone with it. This question is what the basis of this year on the podcast has been, is what does survivorship mean to you?
What comes to mind is like a to-do list in a way, because it just, healing is not linear and survivorship in like feels like there's an end point. And that's, yeah, the thing with cancer is there's never an end. I guess there is when you leave this earth, that's your, yeah, end point. Sorry to be like dark, but surviving, you are constantly needing to look after yourself. And I think, and this is in my experience and just in my own family dynamic where I learned to always put my needs last. And so survivorship also is no one else is going to be there to do that for you. There's nobody who's, here's how you survive. Because, yeah, even if other people have been through the experience, you are an individual and you're going to have your own experience. And so surviving it really is tending to yourself. When was that in 20? Yeah, I think it was in 2020. Because like you're constantly checked on. And I went in just for like my regular blood draw and they check for tumor markers and all those sorts of things. And something was weird. It was like, which also in hindsight where they're like, you might have like leukemia or something. And so it was like, I had to go to oncology. Like I had to go to and do all of these other things that was like, okay, all right, what are we going to do if it's back? And it's just, that's part of the survivorship also is like,
yeah,
the roller coaster of every time you have to go get scans, every time you have to go get your blood drawn, you are taking care of yourself. And there's also this constant threat of maybe it's coming back. Maybe it's in a different form, like maybe it's this, yeah, sort of coupled with the ADHD and a very active mind. That's also, it's very easy to be like, all right, this is the thing. I don't mean it to, yes, be so, because I'm like, I can look at upsides of the survivorship. Because one thing I will say is it also, it allows me to be really a good support for other people who have these types of hard experiences.
Yeah.
That it's like, okay, I can listen and be really empathetic. And even though my experience might be different, I have a different cancer than you, it deepens your like emotional intelligence also.
I think so too. Thank you so much for sharing your experience. Yeah, it's been really good to learn more about your cancer experience and how that sort of shaped things, but also just another person with ADHD to educate and maybe connect with other people, because it is, I feel like there's so much we don't know about it.
You're constantly learning, which can be good for dopamine-seeking people.
Yes! It so can. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. And anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word.
The mirror's image, it tells me it's home time, but I'm not finished, cause you're not by my side. And as I arrived, I thought I saw you leaving, carrying your shoes, decided that once again I was just dreaming of bumping into you. Now it's 3 in the morning, and I'm trying to change your mind. Left you multiple calls into my message, you reply. Why'd you only call me when you're high? High. Why'd you only call me when you're high? Somewhere darker, talking the same shite. I need a partner. Well, are you out tonight? It's harder and harder to get you to listen. More I get through the gears, incapable of making all right decisions and having bad ideas. Now it's 3 in the morning and I'm trying to change your mind. Left you multiple missed calls until my message you replied. Why'd you only call me when you're high? And you're starting to bomb me, baby. Why'd you only call me when you're home? We'll be right back.
today. My heart is that much harder now. And I thought that it would stay that way before today.